The Brekshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Hello and welcome to the Blackshaw Arts Hour. I'm Ellie and I am here with Matt.
Hello, good evening.
Yes, good. And Alex.
Hello, hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, thanks.
Good.
I mean, it's a bit of a rhetorical question.
You know, got to ask.
Yeah, it's absolutely. Polite. Yeah, good job. We're going to be chatting about lots of things today, including Edinburgh Fringe. We'll be catching up with the lovely Dave Bibby.
Woo!
See how his show, Nobody Puts Bibby in the Corner, is going.
See whether anybody's successfully put him in the corner. I understand that that's the concept of the show, right?
I think that's the aim of the game. You do that and you win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he win on the Fringe.
Is he on a little Roomba?
No, it's a big Roomba.
Oh, it's a big Roomba.
A little Roomba would be silly.
Oh, yeah, good point.
We're also going to be coming to you with an announcement.
Ooh.
I realise saying an announcement makes it sound like you're kind of remixing the word announcement.
An announcement.
Which we'll do in a bit. And, of course, we're going to be having a little game of Edinburgh Fringe Roulette.
Naturally.
Because the Fringe is happening right now as we speak.
Is it?
Yeah, it's August.
Wow.
I know. But we're going to start with a little film review from the one and only Matt Boothman.
The Matt Boothman film review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
What are you reviewing for us this week?
I want to talk about Under the Shadow.
I really hoped you were going to say Under the Sea then.
Unfortunately, there is no Sebastian Solo Little Mermaid sequel.
I'm out.
I know we're all crying out for it. But this is instead... So this is not a film that's out at the moment. It's a sort of In Case You Missed It review.
Oh, okay.
Because Atomic Blonde, which I was going to talk about, isn't out yet because I got my timings wrong again.
Kelsa, please.
So we'll do that next time, hopefully, maybe.
Yeah.
But this is a film which is now out on DVD and Blu-ray if you want to watch it.
Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yeah. Written and directed by Babak Anvari. This is an Iranian chiller. So it's set in the 80s during the Iran-Iraq war in Tehran.
Lighthearted.
In Iran. Sorry?
Yeah. Lighthearted.
Yeah. And it's about... it follows Shideh, played by Narges Rashidi. I do not know if I'm pronouncing her first name right.
You're doing really well with some names that and titles that are not in your first language.
Yeah. So it starts with her being told that because of some peripheral involvement in revolutionary or sort of student protests years ago, that she's not allowed to continue studying to be a doctor. Her plan for her life is basically derailed right at the beginning of the movie, and she's left not really knowing what she's going to do.
Is it because she's a lady?
That is implied that's a factor,
right?
But it's blamed on the fact that she went to some protests when she was a student.
Okay.
So she goes back home to her husband, who is a doctor, their 6 or 7 year old daughter, and is left holding the baby, as it were.
Yeah.
She's not got anything to study for anymore. So she's purely the child caregiver, especially when her husband is called up to do military medical service.
Yeah.
Say that 5 times fast.
Military medical service.
Yeah, that one. So she's left in their Tehran apartment, in an apartment block, with the daughter, with her life sort of derailed, just as Iraqi missiles start falling on the city, and their own building has a near miss where a missile comes in through the ceiling but doesn't explode.
Oof.
Whoa!
So there's the top apartment in the building is wrecked.
Yeah,
and some strange things start happening in the building that suggest that maybe they had a near miss where the missile didn't explode, but maybe the missile brought something sinister with it.
Like a supernatural sinister?
Yeah.
What?
People start whispering about the djinn.
That's the thing I've heard of.
Yeah. Is that DG?
DJ, the djinn, yeah. The spirits of malevolent spirits of wind and air.
Sure.
So the question is, do we stay or do we go?
It's the ever long question.
the question everybody's asking of everybody in a horror or chiller movie situation. Why don't they go?
They always go, no, 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 no.
What have we told you about singing?
It's fine, it's satirical.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you always
We've been over this.
We have.
Loophole.
She has her husband phoning her up on damaged lines from the front saying, why haven't you left? Why haven't you gone to live with my parents yet? All these sorts of things.
Sure. Classic wife-husband chat.
Seems legit.
But it's for a lot of it, it's quite a short movie. It's only about 80 minutes long, all told. For a lot of it, the supernatural horror chiller stuff is taking a back seat, and it's about the two women, the mother and the 6 or 7 year old daughter, rubbing along in an apartment together that they don't seem used to being solely in just each other's company.
Mm-hmm.
With the added complication that Shida is hurting. She's still raw and vulnerable from being told that her ambitions are going to be derailed.
Yeah.
And in that environment where the two of them can't help rubbing up against each other, she's constantly sort of lashing out and they can't seem to help arguing and damaging one another.
Oh.
Especially as their isolation increases and they're pushed closer and closer to get closer together as all of the neighbours start to leave.
Right.
Leaving town to escape the missiles or leaving
djinn.
Town to escape the djinn, depending on how superstitious they are.
What kind of stuff happens that's possibly the djinn?
So it mainly manifests in the daughter, Dorsa, who comes down with an unexplained fever that won't break.
Mm.
And starts to talk about figures that she's seen and people that she's supposedly spoken to that nobody else can see.
Is she a cute little girl as well?
Yeah.
It's always the cute little kids who have a connection to the ghost thing.
They're no good. Get rid of them. That's what I say.
The ghosts or the children?
Yeah.
So they're in the situation where... The big decision is stay or go, but at least for the beginning, go sounds to her synonymous with you can't do this, like you can't manage alone.
So
like
she's drawing a parallel with her career.
You've been told that you can't pursue the career you want, and now people are saying that you can't manage alone as a mother either.
You're a failure.
I mean, she's in,
so it becomes,
you know,
a pride issue.
Less than usual situation for being a mother, though. What with there being a war and possibly a malevolent force in the home.
I mean, there's a caption right at the beginning of the movie that points out that the Iran-Iraq war is the longest war of the 20th century.
Right.
So it's one that it was normal for anybody living through it by that point. I think it's set fairly far through the situation.
I was not aware.
So the shelling is a new development, but the being at war and
that's just cash.
That situation is just that's just life. So staying put starts as an act of defiance, but it develops through various situations from we're staying to we can't leave to we're trapped here. There's this sense that there can be no escape. It becomes very oppressive. And even fleeing, as she does at one point, just flees into the street because of something that happens that's maybe supernatural, maybe not. Fleeing into the street on short notice means that she's uncovered and she's immediately picked up by police. So there's the sense that fleeing the horror of the oppression of the apartment is just fleeing into a different kind of trouble.
Yeah.
Like there's no escaping the general being in danger.
The Iran-Iraq war was 1980 to 1988.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm.
8 years.
That's good maths, yes.
Thank you.
As also, it's partly a movie about... So, a subset of horror movies is movies about possession.
Yep.
This is a movie about possessions.
Sure.
Okay. So, apparently part of... this is a part of the legend of the djinn that I didn't know, which is that they supposedly... their MO is they seize something that has value to you, some object that you treasure, and they... as long as they keep hold of it, you can't escape. They will always be able to find you. They'll always be able to harry you and mess with you.
Yeah.
So it's about... so one of the reasons that they can't leave is because the little girl's doll, given to her by her dad...
it's always a doll.
...is missing. Presumably, or at least she thinks, taken by the djinn.
Sorry, can I just stop you there? I've just got to go and burn all of my worldly possessions.
They're gone now. You're safe.
And homeless.
Yeah, well, you know. Better to be safe than home. No,
wait.
Yeah, and there's a similar thing later on with the one medical textbook that she saves from the bin bag that she can't bear to let go of.
So does the djinn get hold of that as well?
So it's like the things that you kind of pour yourself into in some way that either you give it some meaning, like as a memento of a family member, or you invest it with meaning because somebody's told you, keep this by you and it'll protect you, or it's a memento of a life that you were going to have, or as that book becomes sort of a reminder and like an anchor, like a reminder of the shame.
Stuff that means stuff.
Yeah, it can be used to, it can become a weight around you that holds you back. It's about the...
Alex is looking so scared right now.
you're thinking, what would it take?
Yeah, what would it have taken of mine?
You've got loads of stuff that it could take.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
I put emotional attachment on a lot of things.
Yeah, it could just take anything from your flat and be like, job done.
It could take one flip-flop and that would be it. I'd be ruined.
You love those flip-flops.
So much.
They meant so much to me.
Now you've only got a flip.
I mean, that's another of the things that it's about is... mundane objects become a token of something's magical control of you. It's about the world of myth and legend encroaching on the mundane or the real world. So mundane things start to take on otherworldly or sort of poetic significance, like everybody puts the big X's of tape over their windows so that if there's an explosion, the windows won't, you know, the glass won't shatter and cut you. And that sort of retaping the windows becomes a sort of ritual of protection.
Right.
Like it takes on a kind of extra ritual significance. And because the djinn supposedly rides in on the wind, every movement of the air takes on a kind of sinister significance as well. It's his face.
It's not good. No. Ghost bombs. Gusty ghost bombs.
So, like,
I should
weirdly
rename it that.
Yeah.
Like For a claustrophobic horror chiller sort of movie, it's oddly bright. Like, it's quite bright and airy. There's not a lot of people trapped in dark spaces and something appears and goes boom or something like that. It's a well-lit kind of hazy in places movie that is... It creates the tension and the terror from those little things like the movements of air or... shots of objects that could have been taken by something malevolent in places where they shouldn't be, things like that.
And is it? It's not really a spoiler to ask. I don't think whether is there resolve at the end of the movie or is it no resolve?
There, sort of yes and no, both.
Awesome.
Something is resolved. So okay. So the immediate situation they're in is resolved.
Okay. But you don't ever find out.
But there is
everything.
Something that is left hanging.
Something
whether the djinn is real or not.
Something left hanging that means that the ending of the movie is quite a sucker punch. Like point at which they choose to end it.
Oh, man.
I quite like
things that are wrapped up all neatly at the end.
See, those sort of endings to films don't bother me, but I think in this instance I'd be like,
can I ever sleep again or not?
Yeah.
Not with the window open.
No. Hermetically sealed is how I shall sleep.
I'm just going to have to come to your house and be like...
Don't do that.
Alex.
That's not creepy at all. I mean, that's going to be...
It's fine. If it happens now, you can just be like, it's just Ellie.
Yeah, it's just Ellie. This ghost outside being like, well, she's ruined that.
I've got nothing left. So, yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say, Matt?
I was going to say, it's watch sensible. It.
Oh, so you think... Yeah. Okay. I feel like I might need that's to be the... with someone else to watch yeah. it. I don't want to watch it
in
on my own.
In a brightly lit room. So and then well, it's on that on DVD, so perfect.
They'd have to watch... They'd have to, like, sleep over afterwards because I would be... It's one of those things where you wouldn't want to sleep by yourself afterwards, right?
And you'd need to maybe sleep with a copy of your, like, flat inventory to make sure...
So I could check so it every 5 minutes.
You can check in the morning that everything's still there.
I don't need an inventory, it's all up here, Matt. For the benefit of the listeners, I'm tapping my head right now. No, I am like that. Like I would notice if anything was out of place.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't.
No, I know you wouldn't.
That's the sad thing. They've got me on two fronts there.
I could take half your stuff and you'd just be like, something might be different. Nah.
It's fine. Is the food still here? Absolutely. I'd notice if they took food. I'd yeah. be like, you're stealing my
and your phone
again.
As well.
And my phone, probably.
It takes you a while, though, with your phone.
It does, yeah. I'd probably try ringing it from, you know, the phone that I don't have. That would be a great little game.
Have you ever thought you've lost your phone? And then you're like, oh, I better ring it. And you pick up your phone and ring your own number.
Oh, no, I've never done that.
I've done that, like, twice.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing.
I've also done it a lot where I think I've lost my phone and I have like a fevered panic and hunt all round for it before realising it's in my hand.
I've done similar things. I remember like as a child, yes, this has stuck with me, as a child, desperately searching for this hand puppet that I really liked. And I couldn't find it anywhere until I looked on my hand and it was right on my hand.
That is definitely horror movie fare.
Do you think?
Especially if it then like turns its head slowly yeah. towards you and you're yeah. like, oh,
it wasn't on your hand in the first place.
Oh, and then it becomes just like where you one find of those it. Hands that attack you.
Yeah.
There's that thing where like people have a hand that
attack
is...
of the killer hand.
Well, no, just it moves.
Like on The Simpsons, where they have like a transplant hand transplant.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It moves independently of yeah, yourself, yeah. so it'll yeah. like grab people.
Yeah.
That's my excuse anyway, and I'm sticking to it. It's my phantom hand.
It's my phantom hand.
add a glove puppet, and you get the Stephen King's It factor.
Oh,
yeah,
they're doing a new one of that,
yeah.
aren't they?
They're doing it 27 years after the original one, and in the story,
yeah.
he appears every 27 years.
No.
I mean, that's very clever.
He wrote in a reason to remake it.
I know.
That's really clever.
The man's not only is the man a prolific writer, but he knows what he's doing when it comes to selling films.
Well, I think I need someone to come with me to watch that if I'm going to watch that.
It's on DVD. Can watch it at home.
No, it isn't. It hasn't come
you
out
mean
yet.
The new It.
The new It.
No, the new It. Oh, I thought you were talking about the other one we just talked about.
No,
which
no,
was
no.
Under the Shadow, for anybody who's forgotten.
Under the Shadow, available on DVD and Blu-ray now. I'm also available for voiceovers. Good. Well, thanks very much, Matt. That was a very interesting
yeah.
film I probably otherwise wouldn't have known about.
Under the Shadow.
That's my plan.
It's been my plan all along. Hit you with some blockbusters and then sneak in some lesser known films that I actually care about. Excellent. So you're hoping to do Atomic Blonde next time?
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I'm really pleased. I'm really excited to see it. I'm very pleased to see it.
It's been so long since I last saw it.
Never. I was talking to my parents about it and I was like, yeah, it's a new cool film. It's like a female James Bond, quote from Matt Bateman. And it's starring, I was like, oh, it's starring, I want to say Kate Blanchett, but it's not her. It's another blonde lady who kicks ass. Tilda Swinton. No, it's not Tilda Swinton. I just couldn't remember who it was.
Any of
and
these
then,
people would probably be amazing.
Yeah,
I
agree.
I want to see spy movies with all of these people now.
Yes. Preferably all of them in the same yeah. one. But no, it's not. It's Charlize Theron, of course.
Yeah.
And I watched a thing where it said she's the she's like something about her. Basically, she does all of her stuff.
Yeah.
She does like all the stunts because she's had so much training across the types of films that she's done that she's like amazing at martial arts and loads of other things. So she does way more stunts than your average movie star. So that's exciting.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You need her and Tom Cruise in something.
Yes, because he does all his own stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like he's just mad.
he's just a daredevil.
Yeah.
One day he is just going to fall off a plane in the middle of shoots.
But he'll just be fine, though, won't he?
What, is he like a cat? Will he just land on all
fours?
No,
he's like a Ken doll. He'll just bounce a bit, like clatter to the floor, and then jump up and do that weird run with the slicing arms that he does. I mean, I don't mind the guy. But
incisive film criticism from the Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Yeah, thanks.
He's like a Ken doll.
I mean, I don't know down there whether he is like a Ken doll.
Do you think he's asexual? Do you think he's like a
I don't know,
Metatron
he was really excited
Dogma.
That time he just told everyone he was marrying Katie Holmes.
Does that make him asexual?
I don't know, but all I can see in my head is a Ken doll jumping up and down on a sofa.
Like Alan Rickman in Dogma.
Yeah.
Yes! We should do a retro movie review of that film at some point.
I haven't seen it in ages.
Oh, it's so good. I've got it on DVD.
On
DVD and Blu-ray. No, I haven't got it on Blu-ray. It's got it on DVD. I've got it on HD disc.
Laser disc. And Betamax.
If anyone's got an HD laser disc player, then
we've got it on ultraviolet.
What, is that a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Really?
Yeah.
Genuinely, I've never heard of that.
I've got it on Betamax.
Nice. Solid.
No. Okay, good. Back to the show. So, the next thing that we're going to do is a little bit of Edinburgh Fringe Roulette.
Ooh.
Who's got a word they'd like me to put in to the website? Yes, Alex.
Plum.
I think we've had that already.
I'm pretty sure we've had that one.
No.
Yeah, it might have been you that suggested it as well.
Or strat, maybe.
Oh, I'm totally going to go back and in the archives and then just make fun of you about that.
You think of another one. Can we have bald?
Bald, as in a bald person with no hair.
Yeah.
Bald. Oh my goodness, you're going to be very excited with what's come up.
What's come up?
I didn't know. I just came up with that word on the spot.
Bald man sings Rihanna.
What?
Yes, this is the Fringe.
Here we go. I'm going to read you the description. It opens tomorrow. Ever heard a bald man sing Rihanna? Fresh from performing at the world's biggest comedy clubs, including Caroline's on Broadway, New York City, and Yuck Yuck's Toronto, Scottish baldy Gary Sansom, exceptionally funny, that's a quote from Mark Dolan, Balls of Steel, takes an irreverent look at music and popular culture in one hilarious, fun-packed show. It's an hour long. It's on at 8:30 at the Globe Bar, which is venue 161.
I have to say, this is one of those cases where I didn't need any of that marketing copy. The title is enough.
Yeah, and the picture is, I'm not sure if it's actually him or if it's him badly photoshopped onto the body of a woman. I'm just going to show Alex and Matt and see what they think.
I'm going to call badly photoshopped.
Yeah, otherwise, I'm sorry, Gary, but otherwise your head is disproportionately sized to your body.
And also you've got no neck.
And differently coloured.
Yeah. So, if you're interested in all of those things, bald man singing Rihanna and judging photos, you can look up the information on edfringe.com, of course. Okay, do you want to do another little searchy search?
Okay.
Have you thought of a new word?
I've thought of another one.
Tin.
I thought you wondered what you were going to say then. Okay.
I should say we're recording this in a kitchen, so I don't know whether that's got any, any influence on the word
spoon.
The cutlery word spoon did come into my head.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah, there's not, and there are no spoons lying around.
No.
Well, there you go. So sorry, tin. Tinder Rehab is the first thing that comes up. This is a stand-up solo show under the comedy umbrella. The 12-step comedy quirk fest for love seekers. Join Bentley on his journey from Tinder addiction to awesome discovery, calling it Heartbreak Avenue in Self-Help City. The comic and author of 50 Ways to Find a Husband or Wife delivers attraction techniques, alter egos, music, and stupid jokes about relationships. Plus, the secret to staying annoyingly happy all the time. Rehab can be fun. So that's opened today and is running until the 20th.
Might be all right. Sounds like it might. There's an outside possibility it's a pickup artist in disguise.
That is so true.
But there's humour and they're generally not funny. They're generally quite serious about their art, quote unquote.
What, pickup artists?
Yeah. I don't know if they'd want to be like, this is hilarious, look at me.
That's true, actually.
I don't know.
It's hard to tell. I mean, anyway, it's at 7 o'clock. It's 50 minutes long. It's on at the Sweet Grass Market, which is venue 18. So if that's piqued your interest, that's where you can go and see that.
Do you want to do a word, Ellie?
Yeah, I'll do a word. I'm going to do the word wind.
Ooh. No.
Topical.
If it comes up with something scary...
I'm leaving the house.
No, it's something. It's something completely different. It's Wind and Fire. Nicholas Parsons, Peter and the Wolf.
Oh.
Nicholas Parsons, Radio 4 legend, narrates the children's classic tale Peter and the Wolf, arranged by Tom David Wilson for double reed and brass ensemble, and conducted by John Grundy. Originally inspired by Handel's music for the Royal Fireworks, for oboes, bassoons, horns, trumpets, serpents, and timpani. The band will play selections from this signature work together with new arrangements by Geoffrey Emerson and Simon Renard. Nicholas Parsons will be introduced by the Minute Waltz played by Rory Kemp. All proceeds to charity.
Mm.
Oh. That sounds quite nice.
Yeah. That's got a good range on roulette today.
Yeah, that's yeah. One performance only on the 12th. Oh. Well, it's Nicholas Parsons. He's not going to be there the whole month, is he?
Well, I didn't know if they were going to use a recording of Nicholas Parsons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, like War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's on a midday on the 12th of August. It's an hour long at Stockbridge Church, which is venue 317.
In all of our fringe roulette so far this year.
Yeah.
Which I guess is probably going to be all of it, because we might not do it for next show.
It'll be finished by next show.
Has any theatre come up? Or has it been all... it's been all comedy and cabaret and stuff, right?
It really has, actually. And I think that is... probably the way the fringe is weighted nowadays.
Yeah. Theatre's dying.
It's a dying art, shut up.
You heard it here first on the Black Shore Arts Hour exclusive.
Theatre is dead.
It's not.
Counterpoint. We like balance. We get balance here on the show.
I don't know why that is. Yeah. Do you think it's because...
It might be because we've been picking silly words.
It might be because it's silly words.
They're more likely to come up in comedy copy.
Fine, let's try and choose a word that we think is more likely to be theatre-y.
Ooh, okay. Aggressive.
Oh, jeez.
Actually, no, I can see that applying to a lot of comedy as well.
Nothing comes up. I'm going to go with dark. Dark matter. Theatre. Yes!
Well done,
it's a hit.
It's theatre, physical theatre, puppetry. It's called Dark Matter. It's on at Greenside at Infirmary Street, venue 236, at 6:40 p.m. And it's always a short run, 22nd to the 26th.
All right.
People say your whole life flashes in front of your eyes before you die, but what happens when you have dementia? Oh, this is uplifting. Where does the brain go before we die? Dark Matter is a devised and puppetry performance. We use visual and physical storytelling to dive into the universe of Alfie, an elder astrophysicist who lives with dementia. Star constellations and black holes merge in a race against the clock to discover meaning. Available for touring in autumn 2017. That sounds really interesting.
It does.
Sounds good. I feel like I only see puppetry at the Fringe.
Yeah.
Never really see it anywhere else.
It's not my natural go-to. I think it's one of those things where... they generally perform in smaller venues because it's suited to that. You don't necessarily want a massive space.
No.
So it's maybe not publicised so much in London. I don't know. Because in the Fringe, there's loads of little spaces. So have you seen any puppetry at all recently, like in London or not?
I haven't seen it in London per se, but I do know of another company who, oddly enough, are actually at the Fringe.
Oh, yes.
Doing one of their shows. They've got a repertoire of different shows. They're called Boxtail Soup.
Okay.
And they make their own puppets. So cool. I follow them on Instagram. So I get to see them sort of rehearsing with their puppets and how they move and all that sort of stuff, which is really, really interesting. But they're doing the picture of Dorian Gray.
Oh, nice.
So there's lots of like physical stuff with the puppets. And yeah, I mean, it just looks really, really impressive. Never actually been to see one of their shows. I should. Just because...
Do you know what where it's playing and stuff?
No, I don't. Hold on.
I do.
You do.
Trick question.
They are playing at the Underbelly, Cowgate, venue 61, at 11:10 a.m. The show runs at an hour and 10 minutes. And the blurb is... Oh, they open today. What does it profit a person if they gain the whole world and lose their own soul? Dorian Gray, young and beautiful, sinks deep into a frivolous lifestyle of selfish abandon, seemingly unchanged by corruption and untouched by age, but behind a locked door, beneath a heavy curtain, Dorian's portrait tells a different story. Oscar Wilde's classic novels brought to life in a new adaptation by award-winning Boxtel Soup, featuring puppetry and a powerful original score. Ooh, they are wonderful, says The Times.
Yeah, they're really good.
So,
from what I hear.
Suitable for ages 12 plus. So you can take some older children along. Yep, opens on the 7th of August, runs till the end of the festival.
There you go.
That sounds exciting.
I know.
Well, we've covered some theatrical bases. Okay, so moving on from the roulette, I think we can do our little announcement.
Do you need a drum roll?
I don't know. Yeah, all right, go on, indulge. Blackshaw is bringing back the Scare Slam for its third year running.
Boom.
Woo! We are going to be performing it again at the London Horror Festival. Our good friends up at the Old Red Lion are going to be having us again.
Oh, awesome.
Yes. It's going to be at 7 p.m. on Monday, the 23rd of October.
But Ellie, what is the Scare Slam?
Well, Matt Boothman, the Scare Slam is a rather fabulous event at which we will be looking for some people to participate. That was a badly structured sentence. I can read you the official blurb. Lovers of scary stories unite. Adding the fear factor to increasingly popular spoken word nights, storytellers from across the Horror Fest and beyond will share their worst, or should that be best, nightmares at Blackshaw's third annual Scare Slam. Prepare yourself for a night of chilling tales from both sides of the line of veracity.
Ooh.
That's right. So it's a night of chilling storytelling produced by us, Blackshaw Theatre. And essentially, it's going to be people doing different stories, and they can be in the form of a poem or stand-up or just an anecdote or an extract from fiction, pretty much anything they like. But we will be asking people to do a maximum of 5 minutes per piece, and their solo readings. So it's not a fully staged theatrical event. It is a spooktacular event.
I see what you did there.
Thank you. Of people telling us scary things.
Ooh.
And last year was genuinely terrifying.
It was. There were some really, really scary ones. Yeah. Yours in particular, to wrap it all off, was quite...
real.
Well, yeah, no, that was the issue. No, it was. It was particularly troubling.
Yeah. You can actually listen back. It was episode 50, I think.
Was it? Ooh.
Maybe not. That doesn't sound right.
Go back through the archives. Why not? Go start around episode 50 and just listen to all of them around there and see.
Yeah, and you'll probably find it. You can go to our blog, which is blackshawonline.com/blog, and there's a little menu on the right hand side, and you can just go to new writing, and it'll be under there. There might even be a little thing for Scare Slam, but anyway, just Google Scare Slam. Just put it in the internet. Just put it in the internet, and the internet will provide.
As it always does.
It does.
And that's if you want to. If you want to just come along and be scared, or
yes,
presumably if you want to take part, if you've got a scary story to share.
Yeah. So the opportunities here are twofold. You can be an observer. You can be in the audience.
Observer of fear.
Yep. Well, I mean, you'll probably be participating in the fear, I imagine.
Good point.
Observer of the performances. Or you can indeed contribute. So we will be opening the floodgates soon. We'll be announcing it on the podcast when we do. And of course, it will be all over our social media outlets as well. So you can find all the information for those on blackshaw9.com.
Do we know roughly how many slots there's going to be?
Well, we have got an hour to fill. So at least some slots.
Hurrah.
Some of the slots.
Do the maths.
I mean, it kind of also depends on how much time I give myself for comparing, because I will be comparing. So I try to keep the waffle to a minimum.
Hey, I mean, come along for Ellie comparing alone. If you've ever seen Ellie compare, you know it's a sight to behold.
Thank you, I think.
Sorry, I know I have a very ironic sounding voice, but that was a compliment.
Well, a sight to behold could be interpreted in several ways, but that's fine. But people
an enjoyable
can listen.
Site.
Yeah, okay, we'll just stop there. We'll just stop there.
Glorious.
just shush. But you can listen back to the last one and decide on that basis. That would be totally acceptable. I'm actually just going to look it up now, so you don't have to just put it in the internet.
The sounds of a woman tapping on a keyboard.
Yeah, isn't that what you tune in for?
Pretty much is what I tune in for.
It's what I go to school for. Yes, there is its own tab.
Oh, wow.
Maybe. You can go back and you can look at photos from last year, which is also as part of the London Horror Festival at the Old Red Lion.
They are very atmospheric.
They are brilliantly atmospheric, partly, I mean, you know, mainly due to Andy and his over-enthusiastic, some might say, use of the smoke machine. a smoke machine which we were kindly donated and is, I would say, vintage and produces quite wonderful sounds as well as smoke.
So, yeah, I mean, we should say it's a lo-fi night. Like, it is, it's not a theatrical stage production with scenery and costumes and things. It is just you go along, or the performers go along, and they stand by a mic and they tell your story.
Yeah.
And they weave it with their words.
Yes.
But there is lighting.
Yeah.
And there is possibly smoke.
We provide a spooky atmosphere.
Yeah.
So I was close. It's episode 51
on the podcast. That is close.
One off.
Good. Well done, Ellie.
Episode 50 is well worth listening to as well, though.
Yeah, I'd say all of them are well worth listening to. You can even go really far back and listen to one of the favourite episodes where Matt does a really cringe review of 50 Shades of Grey. Just saying.
We all love to remember those.
Yeah. I've still not watched either of the films.
You don't need to after those reviews. You really don't.
You looking forward to film three?
6 months-ish till the next one.
I imagine you've got it like marked on your calendar, like ringed in red.
Well, it's Valentine's Day, so it's easy to remember.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Are they really releasing it on Valentine's Day again?
They do every year.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, they did with the last one as well.
Until the end of time.
Hope not.
This is really old Jamie Dornan. Good, excellent. I'm so pleased we did this. Scare Slam information will be coming your way really soon, but it's going to be excellent, and it sold out pretty quickly last time, so make sure when tickets come out, you bags are yours speedily.
Get your tickets.
Correct. Okay, well, the other thing we're going to be doing today is having a chat with Dave Bibby.
Dave Bibby.
Is he in the corner? No one knows.
You shouldn't put him there, though, is what I've heard.
I've heard that.
So Dave's got a show up in Edinburgh at the moment. Nobody puts Bibby in the corner. It is a one-man comedy show. We spoke to him last time, and he told us that there was some audience interaction, that he waits backstage like a weird lurker and listens to people who put up the most protest at the idea of being involved and then nabs them first thing. So I'm hoping he's got some good stories about that element of it, and I'm keen to hear whether he's managed to live up to the healthy living he was planning.
What's your prediction for that?
He said that and then said, but I'm also thinking about getting beers on the train. So I feel like...
Start as you mean to go on.
That's what he said.
Yeah, I mean...
So we'll see. But he's seeing a show tonight. So he's obviously doing the things that one should also do at the Fringe.
He's not
seeing shows.
He's not so inebriated he can't see other theatre.
Well, we don't
or
know.
Comedy.
I haven't spoken to him in a couple of hours. He might have been booted out of there by now. but we will speak to him in just a second. So, Dave, hello. Welcome back to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me back on.
You're so welcome. We've been wondering whether you have been successfully put in the corner, because that's presumably the end game for your show.
No. No one's going to put Bibby in the corner.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be interested to hear whether that's the case when we get to the end of the Edinburgh run. How are you? How are your nutritional levels?
Nutritional levels are good. I'm making sure I'm getting plenty of fruit and veg in. Like, for example, I had a bit of lime in my Pimm's.
Wow.
yeah, so...
Chips? You know, chips are a fruit?
I had the gin and tonic when I finished it as well. So, yeah, pretty good.
Good. I'm pleased to hear that. I'm told that if you just have a Barocca the next day, then that's it. That's clean slate and counts as your fibre day.
Exactly. Yeah. Pop a Barocca in your Irish coffee. That is the spirit of the
French. That sounds so gross.
Just carry on from there.
And how's the show been going? How are your audiences?
It's been going really, really well, thanks. I've had like a real up and down... like a range in audiences, like literally from 11 years old all the way up to sargo-outs in their 70s.
Amazing.
Which has been really interesting, because in my mind, like, I was preparing for this kind of drunken Edinburgh audience, and there's been a few sort of big groups who've been drinking all day, and let's go and put comedy, and then other people who are just just like, you know, families and couples and sort of some sort of older people who are just like, you know, what have you got on politics? And I'm like, nothing.
Joke's on you.
Can I interest you in an object? but yeah, it's been really good. And I actually, like, genuinely, I know it sounds very up myself, but every day really learning loads, like, so much. Just, I came for the creative challenge, and I'm definitely getting that, and I'm really enjoying it.
Well, that's really good. Yeah, good. And have people been compliant with your demands to participate as audience members?
95% have. One woman the other day, Sunday afternoon crowd, I said, "Here, I'm going to come up and play a part in this next story." She didn't say yes. She didn't say no. She just stared at me.
And you died.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like, okay, there's a lot of audience interaction in the show, and the one thing you guys are not doing is interacting in any way. So,
what do you, how do you deal with that, though?
Got out of there a bit quicker.
What do you do to, if that happens?
I generally say, look, guys, I'm not going to ask you to do something that I wouldn't do myself. I mean, I've done some weird stuff, but still.
Did that convince that lady?
Not that particular one. She's the only one. Lots of people have that, oh, God, please, no, not me. And then as the show goes on, and I use different people, people are actually quite pleased to come up because they've seen, I'm not doing that whole thing of getting someone up and taking a mickey out of them. I'm like, genuinely, you're going to come up, you're going to be the star. I'm going to tell a story, I'm going to sing a song, and you're going to do this, this, or this, and you're the star, everyone's going to love you. And then at first they're like, this is a trick. But by the end of it, they're like, oh, yeah, he is just being nice. Apart from that one woman who hated me and my whole family tree, probably.
Did you end up having to choose someone else?
Yeah, I just chose someone else. I chose someone, everywhere you go in Edinburgh, you see lanyards. Everyone wears a lanyard. I mean, if you don't have a lanyard, who are you? And I saw someone else with a lanyard, which meant they are somewhere involved in the show, whether they're working behind the bar in a theatre, a performer, a musician, director, the lanyard, and they were like, yes, I feel your pain, young man. I will come up, even if I don't want to, because this miserable woman hasn't even had the politeness to just say no, just staring at me with her devil eyes. Maybe she was dead.
Maybe. That's the happy ending we were looking for.
Have you died on stage? No, but my audience has.
Put that on your flyers. How's the flyering going?
Sorry?
How's the flyering going?
The flyering is going very well. I'm not especially good at talking about myself and being about myself, but my flyers are, in particular, Caleb, young handsome man, who flyered me for another show, so I got him on board to come and fly for me. I offered him a couple of quid more than the other people were paying him, and he is getting lots of middle-aged divorcees.
So he's basically edging in on your patch, isn't that your kind of...
I know, yeah, but he's gathering them. They're still thinking about him when they see me, but by then, all the lights are pointing at me.
So you basically bagged yourself a hottie to do some flyering.
Yeah.
Great, well, I mean, if you could just tweet a photo of him, maybe with his phone number, then we'll let the world know about Caleb and his flying abilities.
He is lovely. He's the kind of man that you would take home to meet your mother.
Well, and then he'd run away with her by the sounds of things. I don't know if that's sensible.
Absolutely. Yeah, and anyone else as well.
I feel like maybe you're going to run away with him, Dave.
I'm trying.
So you've got 3 weeks to consider to persuade him.
Yes, yes, exactly. I'm like, it's not gay, it's like sport, it's something we do together, it's just fun. Come on.
He's not interested. Just take your clothes off. Good. Okay, well, Matt and Alex are here with me. Do you guys have any questions for Dave?
So on the like the audience participation thing, when somebody does that stonewalling thing, does that affect the rest of the audience, do you find? Are they more on your side because they've seen you get stonewalled, or do they go, ooh, I can refuse, and does that like embolden them to not get involved?
On the one hand, it kills the energy a little bit, because everything's rehearsed kind of tightly, and even like there's some music playing, I'm like, next up, this guy's going to join me and this lady here, give them a big round of applause, and if they just come up, I can film for a few seconds, and then they're on the stage and it's happening. If they don't, if there's that awkward conversation, then it's like the air being let out of the tyre, it just crumbles. But the other positive is people generally look at those people and generally say, look, he's not doing anything bad, just get on board. So they are on my side, so the energy sags a little bit, but then at least people are like, you know, with me, and I think I definitely feel that from my audience.
There's a bit of camaraderie. I think if I was in the audience and someone did that to a performer, I'd just start quietly booing.
I think that's the way to go. I need more people like you.
Yeah. Alex has a question for you.
Have you been recognised yet? Are you now famous in Edinburgh? Have people been like shouting, "Oi, Dave! We love you, Dave!" on the Royal Mile?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sick of it. I just want to live a normal life, to be honest with you. I mean, a lot of it is quite often like, you know, where you'll walk out of a show and they've been in your show, or you're seeing another show or something like that, and someone says, "Oh, by the way, we saw you yesterday," kind of thing. It's all kicking off, lots of people coming. Yesterday, there's a bit in my show where I talk about how I got trolled for doing something on TV and how I got lots of random people trolling me. And I talked about that character. And then yesterday I was stood in the bar and a guy came over to me and goes, "Oh, you're that Cricket Edge guy. Oh, no." And I was like, "Oh, my God, this is my day, can't get any worse." But actually, he'd actually been to the show and was referring to the fact that lots of other people had a go before it. But he actually enjoyed it, and then he sent me a lovely Facebook message and everything. So, yeah, my heart sank for a moment. I thought, here we go. But then he came over to actually tell me that him and his girlfriend had very much enjoyed it, and then spent the rest of the day trying to fit my name, Bibby, into pop songs, which is basically my whole show.
I mean, that's a day well spent, I'd say.
Just writing your future show titles for you.
Yeah, that'd be a good stockpile for future show titles. Get them to send them over to you.
Yeah, if you have any, let me know.
Oh, okay, well, I mean, yeah, listeners, if you want to send any suggestions of titles that incorporate Bibby, you can send them to us via social media and we'll pass them on.
I love you, Bibby.
I mean, it's all in the delivery, that, isn't it? It's been a pleasure talking to you as always, Dave. Thank you very much for giving us your Edinburgh update, and we hope the rest of the run just keeps getting better and better for you.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Thanks very much. Love to everybody. Hopefully I get a chance to see you sometime soon.
Yeah, thanks very much, Dave, and don't forget to send us that picture of Caleb for reasons.
Watch this space.
Oh, I will.
thanks this space.
All right, we'll speak to you soon.
Lovely, thanks
very
much.
All right, bye.
Bye.
And that's it for today's show. So tune in again in a couple of weeks' time. We're going to be taking a break to the end of August. We'll be back again soon with another episode of the Blackshaw Arts Hour.